Welcome to The Sailing Road. If you have ever dreamed of sailing off over the horizon, or if you just like to cruise the coast or your local lake, then this podcast is for you. In this episode, we feature part two of our interview with Liz and Jamie from the Follow the Boat YouTube series. We'll also have some sailing news, and our product of the week is a tool that will handle many jobs on the boat. Hello, everyone. My name is Steve Paymet, and I am joined again by my beautiful cruising partner and fiance, Brandy Bryant.
Again, it's me.
Again, we are back, and we're fresh back from a great weekend trip.
Busy weekend trip.
Yeah, so we went to Nashville, Tennessee, and had a great time hanging out in a little country town.
Nickname Mini Vegas.
Mini Country Vegas.
Mini Country Vegas.
So we, it's been about 4 years since we've been to Nashville, three or four years. And I had a business trip that we talked about on the last podcast. So I brought Brandy along on the trip because we enjoy going to Nashville for the weekend.
Yep.
And we were amazed at how much that town has changed in 3 years.
In many ways changed. Grown, busy, party.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of everything now, where when we were last there, it was just, you know, Broadway Street was just one level bars and restaurants and shops, and now it's multi-level and just tons more things.
Yeah, so if you've never been to Nashville, it's, you know, it's the home of country music, and it's kind of like, you know, if you go out to Los Angeles and you go to a restaurant, the chances are that your waiter or waitress or server, I should call them, is an actor, a wannabe
actor. Striving actor.
Yeah. Well, in Nashville, they are struggling musicians trying to get their break. The great thing is just about you can go to bar after bar after bar, and the entertainment is just fantastic. The talent is just through the roof, just really good music, really good bands. And so Broadway is the main strip of all these little country honky-tonk bars. And it's not just country music. It's all kinds of music.
Oh, yeah, definitely everything.
But it has become just party central. And a couple of the Uber drivers or Lyft drivers we had had mentioned that it's been known now as the bachelorette capital of the world.
And we can concur.
Absolutely.
Friday night, we started counting. As we were driving, we saw some walking down the street. So we started counting. And I think by towards the end of our evening, we stopped at 32.
And that was just one night.
That was just one night.
We saw that many every night. And we never saw the same group twice.
No, they always had on different kinds of shirts. So you can definitely tell a difference. It was crazy.
Yeah, but It's definitely a fun town. So if your travels ever get you through Nashville, you got to check it out. It's just everybody's really friendly. All the bars and restaurants that are playing music, it's all open, no cover. You just walk in, check out the band, go to the next place. And so we had a blast. We really had a good time hanging out there. And we actually, during the day, went and did some sightseeing, did a little hike, and I think we put a video up online. Did we do that for the...
I don't think it ended up saving. I think we accidentally canceled it.
No, we tried to do a live video, but we were out in the country and it didn't... I don't think we had enough bandwidth.
We couldn't get service to do it, yeah.
But we also went over to one of the local lakes, the Piercy Priest Lake, which is a... All the lakes there are pretty much dammed up rivers that fill up kind of a reservoir lake. And it was kind of cool. We sat out in a restaurant, and there was quite a few sailboats in the marina.
Yeah, there was. I was surprised.
I mean, it wasn't a huge amount of boats, but there was. We even saw like a 42-foot Hunter.
I would say there was a good 60 boats, and we probably saw a good 15 good-sized boats,
yeah,
too.
But good-sized sailboats.
Poor boats. They can't go anywhere. I was just...
Well, it's a pretty big lake. You can go... I think that lake's probably 10 miles long, so...
Is it really?
Yeah, and there's lots of little nooks and crannies and inlets,
yeah,
and things.
You can only go so far in 10 miles until it starts getting the same thing,
well,
right?
That's why you get a trailer sailor like
Absolutely.
Us.
And you just go all over the state.
Hop on the trailer and go to all those lakes and then bring it on down to Florida. And
I say we take our boat to that lake.
I think we've got a lot more picturesque places to take the boat to. It was cool, though. I mean, they had some pretty scenery around the lake.
Yeah. And we also stopped at, what was it, Radnor Park, State Park or something? Am I saying that right? Radnor? Which is really pretty. We did about a 2.5 mile hike, I think, around another lake and just beautiful area around there. So that was cool. We were little sightseers. Got some exercising in.
It was a good trip. And while we were gone, at the same time, our son, Christian, has gone on his own trip and adventure.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it a couple of podcasts back after our Chicago trip that we thought he might have gotten a little bit of a travel bug with us. And him and a buddy left on a Wednesday, whatever day we put this out. It was like last week. And they drove to Georgia, hung out 2 nights of camping in Georgia. They went to Tennessee. They were on the east side of Tennessee, spent 2 nights boulder climbing and camping with 2 of their buddies there. And then they drove over to Arkansas, and they have been in Arkansas now for 2 days. And then they've got still, I guess, a good, 5 days left of their trip. So we're pretty excited for him. They're hammock camping. If anybody has ever hammock camped instead of tenting it, they are hammock camping.
They're hanging from the trees.
They are hanging from the trees. They are not getting wet, he said. He said they're doing awesome. So we're excited for him. Can't wait for him to get back and see pictures and hear about his trip.
It's the start of his adventures. We always say life is about the experiences, not the things you buy. And hopefully he's
learning that.
So the Olympics started this week. I've also started to watch a little bit of that.
Started and I've been slammed with work and I have not watched them at all.
I've been the same. I usually get to it about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night and I watch for about 30 minutes and then pass out. Cause I was traveling again this week, but I saw the preliminaries of the, I think it's the RSX sailboard competition.
Okay,
and the cool thing, if anybody's following Olympics, the NBC Sports has a really good mobile app that I've been looking at on my iPad. And essentially, you can pull up replays of any of the sports. So, and I was watching things you never see, like judo competitions and things like that.
Yeah?
You can flip it on and just watch a few minutes. But I watched this whole sailboard competition. And man, I tell you, if people say that sailing is not an athletic sport, these guys on these sailboards are pumping the sail
now,
for...
Now, what does sailboard mean?
Windsurfer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So sorry.
Yeah, it's a windsurfer sailboard. And they're all one design. So I think... I was talking to my brother about it, and I think they actually show up, and they are all using the exact same board, the exact same equipment. It's all about your skill.
Well, that makes sense.
You can tune whatever they give you to the level you want and set up your sail the way you like it.
Right.
But it's all the exact same equipment. And man, these guys were working. They were working hard.
Have to pull it up.
So, yeah. So that's just starting. They haven't really got into past the preliminaries, but I think that's coming up this week.
Gotcha.
There was also, I saw a story of a Russian sailor. A lot of the Russians, they've had problems with doping problems. So they had one sailor out of all the countries that have competitors, and it was from Russia, who got tested or positive for doping and some testing they do at some point. And he was banned, but this was a couple weeks ago, and I looked up the story this morning, and he was reinstated. Just like there was a big story with the big Olympic swimmer, female swimmer, who has had like 5 doping bans in her career. And she was banned from the Olympics, and hours before the first race, they reinstated her.
I saw that.
And she got back in, and then our swimmer, I'm sorry, I should have looked up these names.
Lily.
Is that Lily?
I think so.
But she kicked her butt.
Yeah.
I saw the gold medal.
A little while ago. And it's funny that you bring up this Russian sailor that got banned for doping, because today, during my deposition, my attorney, who I work with often, she asked me about him. She said, you probably know about this. And I'm like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. But she said, would sailors really dope up for an Olympic? And I'm like, sure. Sailing can be a very strenuous thing. So
that's the thing. People don't understand that, you know, the boats they're sailing on in the Olympics are, for number one, they're smaller boats. And a lot of how you sail the boat is how you move your weight
your
around.
Strength,
you know, I grew up dinghy sailing as a kid, and I had a hard time with it because I was a skinny beanpole as a kid. I had no weight on me. So no matter what I did, I could hike out as far as I could. It didn't make a difference. All the kids that had a little bit more weight on them had an advantage.
Is that why I do all the grunt work on the boat right now?
Why would that be?
Because you still can't do it?
I think I've had a little bit more weight
since then.
But it's, so it's a challenge. I mean, these guys really work it. These guys that were on the sailboards, man, they were definitely in good shape as much as they were working to get around that course. And they're long races, too, so they really got to have some endurance. So that's the Olympics. We'll keep watching. Hopefully the U.S. will win some medals
USA.
And all of our other friendly countries. It's good competition, so fun to watch. And I'm also releasing a video this week, and I shouldn't say it because I don't have
it out
yet.
You're almost done with it.
But
so
it is so close to being done. I guarantee you by the time I get the podcast done, I'm going to have it out. And that is the video on our $200 boat air conditioner setup.
Yep.
That
make sure you get
years.
It done.
So, yep, we're going to get that done. We've used the same setup on both of our boats, hatch-based air conditioner setup. Works great and served us very well. So detailed all that in the video, and that'll be released this week. So watch on our YouTube channel for that.
And it's funny because your air conditioning setup will probably be like our truck tent video that has the most views.
Exactly.
And it took the least amount of time to make that video, and it's like triple of our views of all of our videos.
We
so
can do a
please go out and subscribe to our YouTube channel and check them out, guys.
Do a video of 6 days cruising through the Keys, beautiful anchorages and beaches and tiki bars
and our 5-minute truck tent.
Truck tent video
triples it.
Gets tons of watchers. So that's
all right.
I guess there's a bigger audience for truck tenting than there is sailing.
I highly doubt that.
We got to start setting up a truck tenting podcast.
Seeming I didn't even know what a truck tent was when we started.
We've created the whole truck tenting movement.
Yeah, if anybody out there truck tents, let us know.
Yeah.
send us an email, crew@thesailingroad.com. I would love to hear how many people out there, because we are in 80 countries with this podcast, people. I would love to hear who else knows about a truck tent. Please.
80 countries, all these people download our podcast. It'll be years before we find one person that sails and truck tents. But maybe they'll watch our video and somebody that listening is currently a sailor will start truck tenting.
Hey.
We've made a convert.
Most people have to put their boats away unless they're, traveling.
That's true.
Ocean-wide. So.
You could do some things in the fall. When you put the boat up, you could go truck tent. So... and I'm also setting up a new resources page on the website. I've got it somewhat built, should be show up there this week. So start watching for that. I'm going to, as we talk about different websites that we use, I'm just going to start creating a big list of all those. In the last podcast, I talked about all the sailing podcasts that we listen to. I should say I listen to. Brandy made it clear that she only listens to our sailing podcast.
Hey, I went to the gym today and I listened to a podcast. Thank you very much.
Did you?
I did.
Fantastic.
Follow the boat, Jamie and Liz.
Ah, nice. A little plug for Jamie and Liz. And YouTube channels we listen to or watch, blogs we like, weather resources, sailing websites, all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to put all that on this resource page and you can look there for that. And I think that is it for the intro chat. I think we're going to take a break now. And up next is part two of our interview with Liz and Jamie from Follow the Boat. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and we are going to get into part two of our interview with Liz and Jamie from Follow the Boat. And last podcast, when we ended part one, Jamie and Liz had just talked about how they cruised down the Red Sea, came through the Suez Canal, came down the Red Sea, and how they went through Pirate Alley with the rally that they did, and then ended up over in India.
And we were admiring Millie.
Yep, Millie. We were just talking about how great Millie is and what a great fishing cat she is. And in part two, we're going to talk more about their extensive refit of their Oyster 435 and the recent repowering issues that they went through. So here is part two of the interview. So let's talk about you went after India. I think you, where was your decision process and how did the refit come about?
Okay. So we decided that we were going to go to South Africa. And well, I think our ultimate goal was to get over to the east coast of America to do the Caribbean in the winter and up the east coast in the summertime. So we had this plan that we were going to go via South Africa. And so we left India to head down to the Maldives to haul out because it's very difficult to haul out in India. And from the Maldives, the plan was to cross the equator, Chagos, Madagascar, South Africa. And of course, these are routes now that have been popularized by the likes of Totem and Delos and people like that. So it was becoming a more recognized route because of the piracy situation. However, trying to cross the equator in the Maldives, I think we probably just left it a little bit too late, didn't we? And there's only one word to say. We got battered. We got absolutely battered by some nasty sustained squalls over a period of days. And so with our tail between our legs, we turned back up to Malé, the capital of the Maldives, in the center of the Maldives, and checked out and made the decision to head over to Thailand instead, because by that point, we had sustained enough damage on the boat to feel it warranted some kind of, dressing. We needed to attend to a number of things that had broken, to some superficial damage down below. And we realized, of course, that Thailand, and we knew this because we had a number of people living in Thailand already on their boats, that it was a good place to go to refit the boat.
Yeah, and to address the question, going back to the Maldives, it was a big shakedown, as Jamie said. So, and in the shakedown, we did realise there were quite a few problems with Espera, one of which was, of course, the osmosis on the hull. So we thought, well, we'll go to Richard's Bay and get that sorted out. We loved the Maldives, but we had so many problems with the boat that we didn't really get a chance to enjoy it as much as we could now with a new boat. So it's somewhere we would definitely like to go back to.
Yeah, I think that was when I was, because I was a fan of the podcast. And then as you guys got over to India, I think that's when you kind of, you know, settled into India and you kind of stopped doing the podcast. And there was a break there for a while, you know, and I would check back once in a while to see, you know, if anything new was coming up. And then all of a sudden the videos started coming up of, you know, you're going to do a refit. And it was, you know, fun to watch, you know, hey, we're going to go into this refit, but then it was, you know, we're going to spend a couple months doing this. And a couple months, every time you'd come out with a new video, well, we've decided to go a little bit further with this. So talk a little bit about the decision to go from just a couple months to what it turned into.
Naive thinking it could possibly be done in 2 months. I mean, Jamie, to be fair, did say, nah, that's going to be 6 months. And I, ever the optimist, said, no, come on, they said 2 months. Of course he was right, 6 months. And then I think after about 2 months, he said, it's going to be a year. Right.
Well, and of course, I think the other thing was that as we started to take the boat apart, we thought, well, since we've ripped this cabinet out or we've moved that or we've taken down this, then, well, we may as well do that as well, that other job that's attached to it. And that's basically how it grew. We figured, well, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. We will never do this again, mainly for financial reasons, but also I really could do without future heart attacks, I think, because yeah. it was obviously stressful. But it was really about making the most of that opportunity and having all of those facilities to hand at the boatyard. It grew and it grew and it grew into this huge project. And what was supposed to be a little bit of a lick of paint turned into a massive rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, you say lick of paint. We were removing the entire... We knew we were going to take the deck down. They were big jobs. We did know they were going to be big jobs. But when you've got so many good carpenters and artisans there, it's daft not to use them. So it just made sense.
Yeah, I was curious on the osmosis. So you, I mean, the boat hadn't been on the water, so how do you know that you're having trouble with osmosis? Just from scraping the hull and you could see areas of concern, or how did you know that that was happening?
We didn't even have to scrape the hull. I think when we were in the Maldives, we got a big jet wash, and straight away you can see the blisters, which, you know, they vary in size, but they're pretty obvious. And I spotted a couple. I thought, oh, I wonder what's going on here. And then realized as I looked down the hull that the entire hull was covered in it. Mm. So it was pretty obvious that we had this issue.
She hadn't been lifted for 4 years. Yeah, and she'd been in brackish water.
So we understand that we've been told that brackish water is not ideal for a GRP hull. And yeah, as Liz says, we hadn't hauled for 4 years. We sat in the water, in brackish water, for 3 years in India. So maybe that contributed to it, but we definitely saw straight away in the Maldives that we had a big osmosis issue.
Yeah, and so as you went through the refit, and I'm going to definitely put the links in for people that listen to the podcast that have not watched your videos, I think that series of you showing the process that you went through in the refit, it's very extensive, because as you said, you went from, well, we're just going to do a few things, to essentially redesigning the entire boat and doing from top to bottom, inside and out. The only thing that you really didn't do was the engine, which now has been done. But I thought it was interesting, too, that you, being where you were and finding that boatyard in Thailand, you spoke of all these skilled tradesmen. And just from watching the videos, you can tell, I mean, these people really do have amazing skills. And you found, you know, as you spent more time there, the ones, the good ones and the bad ones, the ones that had, you know, good work ethic and would show up and do things, you know, when you needed them to be done and to the appropriate level of quality. And then I always thought it was interesting, you served as kind of a general contractor, correct?
Sorry, Steve, I didn't catch that last.
You were kind of the general contractor. You were, instead of the boatyard running all the guys, were you essentially doing that?
Yeah, you have to. Okay. You absolutely have to. They don't have anyone there who can do the job for you, or they might have someone who says they can do the job for you. But every single person who has a yacht and they haul it out in Thailand, they need things doing to it, you need to be there. You have to keep an eye on what's going on.
I mean, I don't have much experience in other boatyards, but I would argue that that's pretty much the case in any boatyard, isn't it? Mm. You know, you need to be there to make sure that they are doing what you want to your specification. Unless you're happy to leave them to do it their own way. We had a very clear idea about what we wanted. And yeah, so we had to be there all the time, looking over the shoulder of the, without getting in their way, but guiding them and showing them what we wanted.
Yeah, I mean, with the best will in the world, we had some great people working for us, and they would say, yep, you'd explain, yes, I understand, yes. You go away for a couple of hours and come back, and they haven't done it the way that you thought that you'd agreed. And it's simply that they didn't understand, or they'd never done it that way before, so they continued doing it in the way that they'd done it, whatever it might be, whether it be carpentry or whatever. So if you can imagine trying to do that by email from abroad,
right.
There were plenty of boats there that did try to do it without being in the boatyard, having fairly extensive work done on their boat, and I think without exception, it all went wrong, you know, pretty much every time. So we would certainly advocate being there with your boat, and you should be. You know, you need to know how your boat's built, what went into it, where everything is, where all the wiring is, how all the carpentry works, how to get from A to, you know, how to get things from A to B. Make sure that every layer of the hull has been treated properly, so that you're happy that the osmosis has. They've done the best job they can. You know, who knows? You get back to a lovely smooth hull. Who knows what's going on underneath it?
Right. And I think the end result is that now you probably have the newest, most beautiful 1989 Oyster 435 in the world. It is gorgeous. I love the outside colors you guys picked, and the inside is just it. And it was as much frustration as there was in the process. it was fun that I could see you guys were actually, you were enjoying the redesign of the boat and getting involved and taking on that task. I think that's probably, as I watched it extend, there was good reasons because you were enjoying the process. And once again, you got to know the local community. You joked around with all these workers and their families. You became part of their families. I know they were very sad to see you guys go because you really, really became part of that community there.
I think that was part of the experience. Well, certainly for us anyway. I can remember only one afternoon when I felt stressed enough I had to leave the boatyard and go into town for a beer just to get away from it all. And that was in the space of 13 months. It was such an enjoyable experience. We learnt so much. We now know our boat inside out, up, you know, top to bottom. I know every single nut and bolt in that boat now. Liz knows exactly how the deck was constructed and painted, and, you know, and having that knowledge was part of the experience. So that was great. And then, as you say, 13 months, you can't not make friends with the local people there. So that was also part of the experience as well.
Yeah, and we've been back since and been welcomed back like family, haven't we?
Yeah. I think it's interesting, though, that we saw it as a big experience like that, because I do have to say that you do see people coming in who have their own expectations of how the yard is going to work and don't have that, they don't accommodate the differences in culture. And it can be a very frustrating experience. So this is quite an important aspect of it, I think, is to understand how the local people work. And of course, getting to know the local people outside of work gives you an understanding of how they work inside the work as well.
What would you say as far as if you looked at doing that type of work in the United States or in the UK, how much of a difference in price would you say it was doing it in Thailand compared to?
Well, yeah. So I think the Liz is pointing at herself to say, I'll answer this question. And she should do, actually, because she ran the budget sheet, so yeah, I'll let her answer.
I'm the keeper of the purse. I keep it very closed. Well, it was an expensive refit, obviously, but compared to the UK or certainly the US, I should think it was probably a third at least, because the biggest part of the budget was, if you take out the electronics, the purchasing of all the new navigation equipment and so forth, you take that away from it, The majority of the costs went on people, and we all know how much people cost in those Western countries. For instance, a top carpenter was £24 a day, which is probably about $4.
Wow! Yeah.
No, I'm joking. I know the pound's bad. £24 a day for a highly skilled professional carpenter. Even less, perhaps, for the stainless steel workers, and. The sort of cheap basic labourers were 800 baht, well, no, 400 baht, which is about £8 a day. So you start putting in those quantities, and I'd say at least three times the amount, to be honest with you.
Just as an extra point to make, though, certain jobs seem to take a lot longer than we anticipated. And as Liz said earlier, that's part naivety on our part, but I think it is also a cultural thing as well. There were certainly moments where we were getting a little frustrated because jobs just seemed to be taking a bit longer than we were expecting. So obviously the flip side of what Liz has just explained is that you're paying for workers who maybe would take longer to do a job than they might do in America or Australia or Europe.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, it's very difficult to negotiate a job price over here. You do pay by the day, which is another reason for being there on site, so you can see that they are all working as fast as they can, well, you know, reasonably. So we did manage to negotiate a couple of job prices, but it's extremely unusual to be able to do that. So, yeah, you are paying by the day, although it's a lot cheaper.
So when the refit was said and done, did you pay more on the refit than you did for the original price of the boat?
No, we paid less.
Oh, okay. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because here are so many people we talk to, they say, well, we bought the boat and then we decided, well, we needed to fix a few things before we knew it. You know, the surveyor didn't catch this or that, and they've ended up, you know, doubling the price that they originally paid for the boat. So seeing how much you guys did, I mean, you ripped the teak decks off, you repainted the whole thing inside and out, you redesigned pretty much, recovered every bit of the interior, you know, with all new materials. So to say you did that for less than you paid for the price of the boat, that's amazing. That's good value.
It really is good value. I mean, there was a point at which when we arrived here, Jamie and I discussed at great length, do we just sell her and buy another boat, perhaps in Europe? But then we looked at what we could get for the boat at that stage, which was a lot less than we would have than we paid for her in the condition that she was in. And then we would have to buy something for the same price and then probably have to do it up in Europe. And there was simply no alternative to the choice that we made, and we're so pleased we did because we love her.
She's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah,
she's a great boat. She really is a great boat. Now we've got her the way we want her.
Yeah, it's very personalized, and you've got a tight bond there because you've gone through all of this and redesigned her exactly how you wanted.
Yeah, we were lucky that both Jamie and I we have similar tastes, so it wasn't too much of a headache, was it?
Well, and I think the other thing to make a point of saying is that living on the boat for a number of years before undertaking the project was really important, certainly for us. And we get quite a few people saying, I've just bought a boat, I got any ideas on refitting? And the first answer we give them is spend some time on the boat first. Get to know her. Get to know what it is you actually want from the boat, the changes that you can make. And you only really get to know that as you grow comfortable with the boat.
Yeah, there are probably things that we've done now that we never would have thought of when we first bought her.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Definitely. And as long as you make her seaworthy, buy your boat, make her seaworthy and safe. That's all that matters, and you have somewhere to sleep. Just enjoy it for a bit before you start making any major changes.
So let's talk a little bit about the kind of the high points and the low points of cruising. I know that you guys have had some frustrating experiences even since you've been to Thailand. I remember, I think there was an instance when you got rammed by a fishing boat, and now you've had some engine issues. Talk a little bit about those situations and how you've dealt with them.
Okay. Well, I can give you the high, and I think both Liz and I agree on this. It's our turtle rescue in the Indian Ocean when we were being battered by those squalls and up to 5 meter swells and dark clouds on the horizon all around. We had problems with the head sail. We couldn't furl it away. We had to drop it. And
we had no autopilot. We were hand steering.
Yeah, we were hand steering as well for 1,200 miles.
In the southwest monsoon.
And in amongst this all, we saw a floating tangle of fishing net, and in it were two turtles. I won't tell you the long version of the story, but basically we turned the boat around into the waves, got Liz soaking wet on the bow of the boat, who was stowing the sail, and came alongside these two turtles who were wrapped up in fishing nets.
Yeah, we practiced our man overboard to do it, didn't
man
we?
Man overboard skills, and we got them on board. They were flapping around furiously, very sharp fins, they actually cut our hands, but we managed to free them from this fishing net, didn't we?
Yeah, because it's in with the low, isn't it? Because one of the lowest points is when we lost all auto steering on the boat. We had we didn't have an autopilot that worked anyway, and then we've got a wind pilot, and the auxiliary rudder had got snapped off overnight, so we were hand steering 2 hours on, 2 hours off. In fact, we did that for 2 weeks in the monsoon with storms raging every hour or so, and that was pretty low. That was pretty difficult.
I remember the very lowest point was when we lost steerage altogether because of the currents and the squalls. And after 24 hours, we had sailed a triangle and we ended up in exactly the same spot we were 24 hours before. And I remember that was the lowest point for me.
My heart so frustrating.
Are we ever going to get out of this? But in amongst this, all of this was this turtle rescue. So as Liz says, yep, that was definitely one of the biggest lows and definitely one of the biggest highs. Yeah. But yes, it does seem like it, in the last 18 months, we've just had just continual issues, not just with the boat. Of course, Liz has been going back to the UK to visit her dear old mum, who's not been well. Liz, as we said earlier, she hasn't been sailing at all this year because of this. We got rammed by that. It was actually a kind of row boat with a big ramp on the front of it. And they had problems with their gearbox and ended up ramming the back of our boat and destroying all our lovely new stainless work we'd only just had finished a few months before.
Out of that, actually, one of the ways that we were able to sort that out was talking to the manager of the boatyard, Gia. So having spent the 13 months there, as we were talking about earlier, and made all these friends, including Gia and his wife, Julie, we were able to call him and get him to help. And had we not had that experience and made these wonderful friendships, it would have been a lot more difficult, I believe. He really stepped up and helped us, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a theme, you know, I'm thinking back to how you guys met and, you know, getting the boat and all these different situations just kind of speaks to fate. You know, you're in the right place, the right time, things come together. You're experiencing, you know, the worst time ever in that ocean crossing, and then all of a sudden you come across these turtles that need help, and maybe that's why you were, you know, having so many troubles that put you in the right place at the right time to pull that off. So, you know, sometimes I really do believe that you know, things come together for a reason in our lives. We just don't realize it sometimes.
Yeah, and I think also you have to be open to that. You know, we could have just said, "Oh, let's just rescue turtles and carry on," but it did lift the spirits, really lifted the spirits. And you have to be open to taking in any little bit of encouragement that you can, and making that the focus rather than the, you know, the desperation that you might feel.
And hearing your sea turtle rescue absolutely warms my heart, because I love sea turtles. I am such a fan of sea turtles. We were actually snorkeling in Miami over the past weekend, and I was swimming back to the boat, and all of a sudden I feel Steve just pounded on my foot and look back, and there was a sea turtle. I was so excited.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We're the same.
Swimming with turtles, isn't it amazing?
Oh, they're beautiful.
The greatest experiences in life, it really is, yeah.
They lift your heart every time you see them, just wonderful things. Like dolphins, you know, dolphins, the other thing, it's an old cliche, sailing along, the dolphins come to the bow and off you go and they're all sailing together. And that's happened for the last 10 years, and every single time it's like the first
time.
Right,
it just never gets old.
It's magical. So let's talk about the other frustration that you've had recently that you're just overcoming now. After doing this major refit and finally getting the boat put back together, and we're starting to watch your videos, and you were starting to get back out cruising, just really enjoying this huge project you finished. Then you ran into some engine trouble. So tell us a little bit about what you've gone through recently with the engine.
Steve, we've just sorted the engine out. What are you trying to do?
Well, people, you know, they need to learn from now. The engine, or the whole refit, they'll learn from. Now you just went through what it takes to repower a boat. So talk a little bit about that.
So the first thing I should say is that it was our own stupidity and naivety for not dealing with the engine throughout the refit. It was, we realize now with hindsight, it was a silly thing. We should have taken the engine out and given her a good service.
We didn't think about it, did we? Because she'd been running so sweetly. It was our own stupidity.
Yeah. So that was a bit silly. When we left, we came back over to Langkawi, and then we went over to Koh Lipi, this beautiful group of islands on the very south of Thailand. And we ran into a problem with the starter motor. That was the first of many problems we had with the engine. And again, Gia, the yard manager at PSS in Satun, where we did the refit, was able to help us out. And he sent a fisherman in a long-tail boat to come and pick up the starter motor from us and take it to the mainland and get serviced. I think after that, we then had some gearbox problems. So we had to go back to Langkawi and strip the gearbox and get that serviced as well. And of course, every time these things happen, you have to go back to a marina or a safe anchorage. And I don't like being at anchor when you are dealing with the engine, because if anything goes wrong, you can't start the engine to weigh anchor. So with engine issues, I always like to go into a marina. I feel safer doing that. But inevitably, you end up getting stuck in a marina for some time. So we sorted those problems out. We changed the Morse cables. Everything seemed to be all good. And, you know, for the next year or so, we were cruising around and using the engine when we had to. And then we had this this latest problem, which is basically water in the cylinder head. It turns out we also have a broken piston rod as well, water in the cylinder. And, yeah, we ended up pretty much writing off our old engine, and we had to basically get a new one. And I think you're probably aware we put together a whole video answering the question of what to do next. Mm. What were our options? Mm. And we considered all sorts of different options, you know, refurbishing the engine, getting a rebuilt identical engine, looking at electric hybrids as well. But we plumped for another diesel engine, a new diesel engine, and decided to get one from the UK by Beta. And that process has taken 4 months. So we've been without an engine and immobile for 4 months, and quite a bit of that time Liz has been back in the UK whilst I've been picking up the engine and basically installing it with a mechanic here.
Yeah, most of that time was waiting, actually, wasn't it? We've been pretty quick once we got it here.
Yeah.
So now you truly do have a new Oyster now, from end to end, top to bottom.
We do. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I think it was I think the only thing left now are the sails. We've still got the original sails. So one day we may treat ourselves to new sails when we can afford it.
But, yeah, that's the next one.
Yes. Now there should be no reason, touch wood, to not go out and enjoy, you know, some years trouble-free cruising. And I say that with my, you know, I say that with a pinch of salt, because it's never ever trouble free, is it?
No, absolutely not. And that's like back to the patience. If you don't have patience, or don't want to have patience, then don't be a cruiser, because that's part of what you have to realize about the lifestyle. And we even realize on our weekend cruising that we do now is that if we enjoy the weekends much more, if we just go with the flow, we know things are going to go wrong, or we're going to get in a rolly anchorage, and we may have one or two nights of bad sleep, but when you get up the next morning and you look out at the sunrise, or you sit there and enjoy a beautiful sunset, or pull up to a beautiful beach, it all makes it worthwhile.
Absolutely.
It's really true. And it's something you can keep telling people. You keep, and they say, oh, yeah, I know. But you don't. You do need to experience it, and you do have to go with the flow. And you can't learn it. You just have to do it. And you cannot come to Southeast Asia unless you have patience and tolerance, because you'll just drive yourself insane. There's no question that the cultures are very different from here and the West, and you just sit back and enjoy the moment, and it might take a little longer, but you get there in the end.
Are you guys planning to ever start traveling past the area that you're in, or how much longer do you think you're going to stay in Thailand?
Yeah, it's a very good question, Brandy, because, of course, we never originally planned to be here. We were heading the other way in the Indian Ocean. But now we're here, like we do with anywhere, we're making the most of it. So we're kind of split at the moment. You know, the idea of going to the Philippines, Papua New Guinea or Indonesia, these are all very appealing. But at the same time, we love the Indian Ocean. And there's a big part of us that wants to head back out there. And of course, let's not forget, Liz hasn't been sailing for months. I've been stuck here for 4 months. We're kind of desperate to just get out there and get moving and get the sails out and just go somewhere. So we're not really sure, are we? We still haven't made up our minds.
No, there's a lot of cruising here still to be done. We've done a reasonable amount in this small area, but there's still loads of places we haven't seen. It'd be daft just to leave it. And as for going further east, the reason I'm not keen on doing that is because of the situation with my very elderly parents. I need to be able to get on a plane and get back quite quickly.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so I think that's probably not on the cards at the moment. So we've got this area, we've got Indonesia as possibly somewhere that we would go before we considered moving. The thing is, Jamie and I just love ocean crossings. We love being out in the blue water. So I think that's pulling at both of us. Certainly going to do another season here, possibly two, in this area anyway, in Southeast Asia. But I think we might go back to our original plan that we had in Turkey, which was circumnavigating the Indian Ocean, just keep going round and round, you know, using the seasons and the different areas and the tides and the winds to see as much of the Indian Ocean before we head out.
Yeah, it was interesting to see Delos kind of do that as they went over to South Africa and seemed like, well, they're going to head back to the States. And sure enough, they said, you know what, we're going to do another lap because there's just so many great places and they, you know, it's exotic and, you know, you start going back over to the Western countries and you're back to the lifestyle and the, you know, what you grew up with. And I think it's, if you're a true traveler, you really do enjoy those exotic places.
Oh, well, it was always our original plan when we left Turkey, when we were told to go east, young man. Mm-hmm. We got chatting to a guy who told us of his friend who had spent the last 10 years going in a clockwise direction around the Indian Ocean, up the east coast of Africa, across the Saudi Peninsula, down India, and across through the islands in between. And that appealed to us a lot. And as we came down the Red Sea, we started to fall in love with the area. And yeah, that was the original plan, wasn't it? It was just to go round in a big circle and to keep doing it until we, you know, we felt we'd done enough.
Yeah, we've got all the charts for East Africa, haven't we? We've got Kenya, Mozambique, and obviously all the islands are all sitting there waiting to be used. So there's absolutely no question that we will head that way at some point. It's a matter of when now.
When is always the big question when you're on a boat.
It is. Again, patience.
Absolutely.
And living for the moment, you know, because opportunities turn up that you didn't know about. And we like to leave ourselves open to change our minds at a moment's notice, to be honest with you.
Well, guys, it has been an absolute pleasure catching up with you. We've been following you for years. Like I said, I've listened since back in the probably 2010 from the podcast on, and really enjoy the videos. And you know, we're going to keep following. You know, we're supporters of you on Patreon, and we just enjoy what you do and what you're putting together. So we really appreciate all the work you do to put it all together, so that us people that are still out here slaving away at work and don't have the chance to go do it can experience it through your eyes and through your work.
I feel like we could talk to you guys for another 4 hours and still not even really cover it.
I'm really, really starting to enjoy this. This is great fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's
well,
good
fun. Steve and Brandy, we really appreciate what you guys are doing with the podcast and of course, being supporters on Patreon too. And I think it's great that we have people like you who have the time and the inclination to put these sources of information and entertainment together. I think it's great that you guys are doing this. So, yeah.
Well, this is part of our process too, because we want to get where you are. We want to pull up in an anchorage next to you someday. So it's part of our, I guess, this our diary of documenting our process to get from where we are now to eventually where we're full-time cruisers. And we want to, you know, have this as something that we can always go back and listen to what we were talking about, you know, years before we actually got out there and were able to do it full-time. And the great thing about the way we live now is that we cruise, you know, 1 weekend a month at least. And so we're not waiting until we're retired. We're still experiencing it. We just do it on a more part-time basis. Yeah. And we're gaining the experience as we go. And that's little by little, you grow and learn, and we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, well, we look forward to that day that we hook up in an anchorage and we'll raise a glass together.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and don't worry, we will continue to share our experiences, including all the cock-ups, hoping that other people don't make the same mistakes. But I think it's quite important to keep it real.
Absolutely. Definitely, and we can't wait to see you catch a fish on that pocket fisherman.
I know, it's still in its box.
Yeah, you've been gone so much, you haven't had a chance. So that's going to be our most exciting video that we ever see, is when all of a sudden we see the pocket fisherman coming out of the box, and Millie looking over the side, and that first fish coming up. It'll make my day, so eventually you guys will get there.
Yeah, it's in a box by the side of the bed with a couple of lures, so don't you worry, it's going to be used.
Fantastic.
Well, Liz, get yourself out there on that boat and get sailing.
Yeah, too right. Well said, Brandy. Yeah, it's going to happen soon. It's going to happen very soon. It's going to happen hopefully within the next 2 weeks.
Oh, great, good.
Great.
And let us know when this is up, because I did manage to take some footage of it, and we will be referring to it in one of our episodes in the coming weeks. So we'd obviously like to link to the podcast as well.
Yep.
Sure. You guys.
Absolutely. Definitely. It'll probably be, I think it's our second one out from where we're at right now. So
probably next 2 weeks.
All right. All right. You're a bit closer to real time than we are. But
we'll let you know.
Great. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks so much for being time difference is always a frustration. And
we didn't talk about that at the beginning here. You guys are 11 hours difference than us, so it's
I thought it was 13.
I think it's 11 instead of 12. But
oh, okay.
it's always a challenge. So we appreciate you guys doing this and making the time.
It's been great.
And we'll stay in touch.
Thank you for persevering. Yeah, definitely stay in touch.
Okay.
Great. Nice one, guys.
Thank you.
Fair winds.
You too.
Well, we really appreciate Liz and Jamie for taking the time to do the interview with us. And we know that they have been extremely busy with their boat repowering. And you'll hear more details about that on their Facebook and on their videos as they go through that. So you'll get all the details on the repowering and everything they went through to make that happen. So that combined with the refinishing essentially everything on the boat is going to give you a full picture of what it takes to take a 1980s boat and get it back up to brand new status. I also wanted to make a correction that I made a mistake after the last podcast, and I was talking about the fact that you need to go to their website and check out Liz's photography. And Liz corrected me that Jamie is the award-winning, recognized photographer and has all those stunning images on the website. So I apologize, Jamie. I'm going to give you credit. But I also want to credit Liz because Liz is also just a fantastic travel writer. And both of them together are doing a fantastic job documenting both on their blog and the pictures and the videos. And they just get better and better. So we really recommend you check out their material. So definitely go over to their channel on YouTube. I'm going to put the link again in the show notes here. They are cruising right now in Thailand, and it is stunning. Some of these places they pull into, these little outcropping of islands, and it just looks like, something from another land. It's just really beautiful areas. So check that out. And also, I'll put a link in the show notes to a video of Liz and Millie fishing, because we talked so much about that. Mm-hmm. It's just so fun to watch when they were getting into their fishing. You'll really enjoy that. And if you're enjoying their videos, we really ask you to support them on Patreon. I know that a lot of people that are following different sailing channels or hearing about, be our patron. But, all I ask is pick somebody that you really like, that you're getting good information from, and give them some support, because there's a lot of work. We know there's a lot of work that goes into these videos. And they would really appreciate your support for all the work they're doing and all the information they're sharing. In fact, I know because we are proud patrons of Liz and Jamie and have been for quite a while now. A
couple of years.
Yeah, probably at least a year.
That
they also, after the refit, they put together a special video where they answered a lot of questions and went into a lot of detail that they don't have in their regular videos of, questions people had asked them. Some of the things they talked about is, what their power consumption is and what they considered on setup for power. They address the osmosis and some of the additional questions around how they address that. They talked about things like just minute things like a line cutter on your prop shaft, whether you should have one, what do they think? So there's just a lot of great questions in there. And overall, they answered a lot more detail on the costs that they found of going through the refit in Thailand and outlined different areas of the jobs they did and how much it cost in Thailand. And I found that really interesting because you can see once you see the videos and all the labor and time that went into it to see what the actual cost turned into to get that job done. It was really, really great for them to share that. So check that out. If you become a patron of those, you'll get that access to that bonus content. And also don't forget to check out their podcast. So I didn't know you were listening to that in the gym today.
I think it was the first two, because they're not very long. So
yeah, they're different ones.
They don't ramble as long as you and I do. Exactly. I think I got through like the first two that they produced. So
yeah, and
it's fun because you're right. It's like a narration. So it's kind of like them as they're going through their travel, which before was them recording and now it's them doing the video. So it's just a different concept of the way that they do it.
And it's cool because it's just this audio log of what they're going through and what they're seeing. And they just have a natural talent for describing their surroundings and their fascination with their surroundings and how much they're enjoying. And just, it's infectious. You feel like you're along for the ride. And also listening to those, because I'd listened to them 6 years ago,
is extremely frustrating for me because as we've started this podcast, I've had to think more about how I, you know, see, now I'm stumbling over my words. They rarely ever stumble over their words. They have these beautiful English accents. Everything they say sounds like they're narrating a children's storybook, and it just, it's fantastic. They just do a great job, and they did it from day one, and it just frustrates me so badly. But I really enjoy it, so check them out. And they also, you'll pick up, they, I also mentioned that we're always picking up on the English slang that they use, and then we try to copy it when we're on the boat. They talk about their equipment as kit, and they're tired, they're knackered, and all these other terms. So it's fun to pick up and translate the British slang that we've often never heard. So that is it for the interview, and we're going to take another break here. And up next, we are going to get into our sailing news. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with our sailing news for the week. And once again, if you're new to the podcast, these aren't your usual sailing stories. These are very unusual sailing-related stories that I dig around and come up with. We usually don't talk about much for sail racing and the typical things that most sailing press covers. Generally, they're just things that interest me. I guess that's all that matters. So the first story is about the newly opened expanded Panama Canal. And this opened up on June 11th, was the first crossing. The first vessel through was a 9,472 container ship called the Costco Shipping Panama. And it went through the new canal. And this new canal cost a total of $5.25 billion to build. And it is modernizing the original canal that is 102 years old now. The new canal is 48 miles long. And just like the canal that opened in 1914, it was a bit over budget and 2 years behind schedule when it was first done. But it is a huge marvel of engineering. They say they dredged enough material to fill the Egyptian Great Pyramid at Giza.
Oh my gosh.
Which is one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, 25 times over. The amount of steel used could erect 29 Eiffel Towers. So it's just massive. And the main reason they did this is, you know, the canal, the current canal, the traffic has risen 60% just since 2009. So they've got a lot more traffic coming through. But the real reason they did it is these new ships that they've created called Neo-Panamax tankers. And they're so much bigger and wider, they couldn't even fit through the canal. So it was locking out some of the shipping and things and making it much more expensive to go to certain areas of the country. The new locks are 180 feet wide compared to the old ones that are 110. And they're also deeper. They're 60 feet deep, and the old canal was 42 feet deep. Huh. They say the larger locks and the new lane is going to essentially double the capacity of the Panama Canal.
That's cool. Now we can fit a ton more of sailboats going through there.
Absolutely. We could we could probably put 30 of our boat end to end across the thing to fit in there. What is it? 180, maybe not. But they say that this is going to significantly make a difference in the ships that are leaving from the U.S. Gulf Coast bound for Asian markets, especially with liquefied natural gas, that it will shorten the travel distance by 5,000 nautical miles and 7 to 9 travel days.
Wow.
So that's a huge difference in the shipping activity and being able to get through there quick. And it's also, the project's actually, it got a trickle-down effect because it's triggering activity all the way up and down the east coast of the U.S. that now has access to these Neo-Panamax tankers, but the ports aren't ready for them. So, like in New Jersey, there's a $1.3 billion project
to raise the Bayonne Bridge, an 85-year-old bridge that they've got to raise higher to enable these ships to go get through the canal. Another issue that came up with the new canal is that there's a big concern about having enough canal pilots. Just as we talked about on the last podcast, the pilots that took the Viking ship through the Great Lakes, you have to have a pilot on board to get you through because it's such a unique passage and not hitting the sides of the lock and or the canal. So they're going to need over 300 canal pilots to get the ships through. And the height of these bigger container ships, they can carry up to 14,000 containers on one of these Panamax tankers. And that's double the maximum size of the old. So that makes them a lot higher. And so they're more susceptible to wind gusts coming across. And the underwater currents and everything is different. So one of the coolest things I learned out of this story is that in order to train these canal pilots, there is a facility in France that has been running for, I think since the 60s. And I found a video on YouTube of this facility. And what they do is they create mini size tankers of the real size tanker. And these things are like 30 feet long. And these guys are sitting in these little mini tanker shaped boats. But the models are so precise to the scaled size of the real ship that every action they do is exactly the same as the real ship. And they interviewed some tanker captains and they said that when I came here and got in my in the model of my ship, it felt identical. The way it moved, the way it reacted to the power, because it's all power to weight ratio. And they've set up all these little canals they can go through. It's a really cool video. So I'm going to put that. Pilots
physically get in the captain's seat and steer these boats through.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Either that or they're directing, turn a little bit this way or that way. Right. And they're telling them what to do. But in some cases, they could probably even take control of it. And I would imagine in the canal, they're taking control because the pilots are the ones that are going and learning the controls and how to maneuver these boats with the currents and all this stuff. They can simulate everything in this lake. They can simulate winds, all these little boats running around. It was really cool to see.
They're making job opportunities.
Yep. So I'll put that link to the video in there. I really thought it was a cool. It was like National Geographic or something did a story on it. And it was really cool detail. And give a little history on the Panama Canal that was also in the story. It was kind of cool that I did not know. When they were thinking about the Panama Canal, the idea of it to save shipping time, President Ulysses S. Grant sent a 100-person scouting party down to Panama to say, could this even be possible? Could we create this? And the scouting party came back and said, nah, we don't recommend it. Hmm. Then France spent 20 years with an engineer, Fernand de Lesseps.
More names for Steve.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm butchering that. After 20 years of them digging the canal and doing all this, they abandoned it because thousands of workers got stricken with yellow fever and malaria and dysentery. All these people are dying trying to build this thing. After 20 years, the French give up. And then President Theodore Roosevelt came in and he launched the construction again and eventually got the canal open on August 15th, 1914. So it's coming up on their birthday here, another week. And so the United States, because we finished the canal, we took control of the canal zone, which is about 10 miles wide. And then in 1977, President Carter and the United States signed to turn over sovereignty to Panama in a long-term lease that ended in 1999. So now Panama has full control of the canal. But
Panama 101. And I just realized something. Our next podcast, I could personally give some sailing news because of my deposition coming up on Thursday.
Oh, that's true. You have a case coming up.
I do. It's the state of New York versus the voucher transportation stuff. So if anybody in New York knows what I'm talking about, hopefully I can talk about it later.
Well, you can't let any details of the deposition, but you can talk about the story that's in the news.
Right.
Interesting. Yeah, Brandy got called as a special court reporter because she has boating experience.
which I probably have no idea anything about the whole tanker stuff.
And they asked her, do you know anything about maritime law? It has something to do with boating. And she said, I guess I could do it. No problem.
So what did I do? I phoned my boyfriend. Do I know what this is? I think we've discussed it maybe at one some point.
It's exactly the same things we deal with, just 100 times bigger. Just like the Panama Canal. It's no different. We're all dealing with the same thing. The same winds, the same tide, is just a different size. So our next story is about a couple who went out sailing on the Great Salt Lake in Utah, and they had a very bad weekend. So the couple went out sailing for the weekend, and sometime on Saturday, I guess, or Friday, they got stuck. And they're out on the Great Salt Lake, and they're a couple miles away from shore. The Great Salt Lake, I guess, is a lot of lakes. It can have some shallow areas, but they were still a couple miles away from shore. So they're in the sailboat, and it's stuck. And it was 24 hours later, and they're still stuck on the boat. Nobody's come by. They haven't been able to signal anybody. And I guess their cell phones weren't working, and they were starting to run out of resources. They said they were low on water. They were only planning to spend a couple hours on the water, so they didn't have much water. They had no food. They said they had a half bottle of vodka. And they said here's what happened. The cell phone got wet the night before in the waves, so they didn't have a cell phone to call anybody. And they said the irony was that they were just a few miles away from an island that had, I guess there was a forest fire going on. It was called the Antelope Island Fire. And so they saw people fighting the fire on the island a couple miles away, but they couldn't signal them. They couldn't figure out a way to signal them. And there was a plane, a firefighting plane flying around, getting water and dumping it on the fire. And they're trying to signal the plane, but they couldn't signal the plane. I don't know if they had flares or whatever, but so after 24 hours, they're running out of water and they didn't know what else to do. So they said, well, you know, the island's right there. Let's go swim over to the island. And so they actually considered setting the boat on fire at one point to signal somebody, but they got smart enough to say, let's not do that. So what they did is they just left a note on the top of their cooler. They wrote on it with a Sharpie that said, swam for the island. So if anybody came to the boat and saw it empty, they know where they went. And so they start swimming for the island. And there's the good and the bad of swimming in the Great Salt Lake. The Great Salt Lake is extremely salinic, salty, which means you float like a cork. You know, you're going to have a hard time sinking and drowning in the Great Salt Lake because you could just sit there and not move on your back and you're going to float.
Really?
Yeah. Heavy salt water will float you very easily. The bad thing is that they're going several miles through the salt, and they said if you get it in your mouth, your nostrils, your eyes, it burns. It's so salty,
very true.
Really salty. So for 7 hours, this couple waded, walked, floated, and kicked their way over to this Antelope Island that was on fire. You know, you're going to an island, it's on fire, but I guess fire must not have been that bad. And the lady said at one point she really didn't think she was going to make it. And this just shows you, this is in the summer. This was sometime in June in, you know, the United States. It was probably, the water was fairly warm. But after 7 hours, she said that her body got really cold. She started to hypothermiate. Her teeth were chattering. You know, if you're in water, it just sucks all of the heat out of you. So she was really afraid they weren't going to make it after 7 hours. And the guy said he was so delirious, he started seeing things. He said he saw fishermen fishing. And there is nothing that lives in the Salt Lake. There is no fish you can catch the Salt Lake. So seeing fishermen nobody fishes in the Salt Lake. Because he said he was seeing mirages and all this stuff. Eventually, they crawled up on the shore of this Antelope Island, and they had a welcoming party of flies and spiders.
Oh, my God.
And they just absolutely collapsed. And I guess there was a tourist somewhere nearby that saw them and came and helped them up on shore and got them to safety. But they said the boat was there for almost a week, and then eventually they got it unstuck and somebody sailed it back home. But
my goodness.
Just another one of those stories that the Department of Natural Resources issued a statement that said, essentially, you know, no matter if you just think you're going out for an hour, be prepared, tell people where you're going so that they know where to look for you if you don't show up.
and make sure you at least have enough supplies if something does go wrong, that, you know, water and things to get you by, and maybe some backups, not just a cell phone, some radio, flares. Some flares, you know, those types of things. But not everybody thinks of that. So
I guess you don't think about that you're going to go out and get stuck in the middle of the Great Salt Lake. So
I bet you they were highly seasoned.
Did you hear about, since we're talking about highly seasoned
after their swim, they were marinated.
Oh gosh. Thank goodness they didn't get hungry, right? What was I going to say? Oh, did you see about the Olympic girl from, it was another country, that she was on a boat with her family and she had to swim pushing the boat and save them or something? I have to look
I did see something about that. Yeah. That she had to jump in the water and actually swim and save the family.
Yeah.
And our last story this week is some positive news and a little bit of negative news, I guess, in here. And that's the fact that one of the organizations that tracks piracy against vessels around the world has released their latest report showing that it is down to a 21-year low in piracy. And they say it's at the lowest level since 1995, even though we've seen a surge in kidnappings off of West Africa. This is the IMB Global Piracy Report, and they showed 98 incidents of piracy in the first half of 2016, compared with 134 for the same period in 2015. And that's when they were saying when piracy was at its highest, which was in 2010 and 2003, the IMB had recorded 445 attacks a year. So now we're down to, you know, in between, you know, around 200. So about half of what it was back in 2010 and 2003. They said in the first half of 2016, they recorded 72 vessels being boarded, 5 hijackings, and a further 12 attempted attacks. 9 ships were fired upon, 64 crew were taken hostage aboard, and that's down from 250 in the same period last year. Man, when you put all that together, though, it's still, I don't know if I'd want to leave the dock, you know, it's like, but you gotta figure this is all over the world. And they said the two main factors for this are improvements in Indonesia with security and really cracking down in Indonesia, and also the deterrence of the Somali pirates off of East Africa, that's really made a big difference, that they've really been staying on top of those areas. But they do warn that ships really need to stay vigilant and maintain security and report all attacks of any piracy, particularly off of Somalia and the Gulf of Guinea. And I think it's said here that Nigeria is also has become the world's piracy kidnapping hotspot. Despite all the improvements, kidnappings are on the rise, with 44 crew captured for ransom in 2016. 24 of those were in Nigeria. And that's up 10 from the first half of 2016. So, you know, you crack down in one area in East Africa, and now West Africa is popping up. So, and then the Gulf of New Guinea is also a major area where oil tankers are being hijacked for their cargo, and there's a increasing number of crews being kidnapped for ransom in the Gulf of Guinea.
So, I'll stay in the Caribbean.
Yeah, well, you know, there's certain areas, no matter where you go, even in the Caribbean, they've had, especially this year, there was some issues, I think, in St. Lucia and some other areas that you never know. You just got to be vigilant. Watch, you know, don't leave things out that are, you know, easily attract theft, and just keep an eye out.
Have a plan.
So that is it for the sailing news, and we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about our product of the week. Okay, we are back, and
Up next, we're going to talk about our product of the week. So this week, this one just came to me recently. I think I've talked about this in one of our gift guides or something in the past, but it's just something that keeps coming up that I use and find really handy to have around on the boat. And I think a lot of other sailors use these, and that is a Leatherman multi-tool. The one we're recommending off of Amazon is really reasonable. Some of these can get a lot more expensive, but this one has got great reviews, and I've got a lot of great use out of it. And it's the Leatherman Wingman multi-tool, and it's stainless steel, so you don't have to worry about it rusting, at least not as easily. And this one runs $30, $29.50 approximately on Amazon. And it just, you know, these just come in handy so many times on the boat. If you, you know, there's certain jobs that you need a really specific tool for, a specific wrench, and we have a great tool set on the boat that takes care of all that. But there's so many times that you're just trying to do something quick. You just need a quick pair of pliers or, you know, a little file to file on something or just a quick screwdriver. And that's what the Leatherman comes in really handy for. You don't want to dig in and get all your tools out. It's just that, you know, it's got everything right there. Easy. Randy's smiling at me because
I don't have much to say about this one.
You use it all the time, don't you?
Every trip I have to get it out.
That's the only thing you do. Hey, grab that Leatherman and hand it to me. Grab that Leatherman and hand it to you. And now the really crusty sailors always have one of these on their belt. But I don't wear
You're
a belt.
A crusty sailor?
I wear swim trunks. And I'm not going to wear a belt with my swim trunks.
We could just tie a string around you. And
like Robinson Crusoe. I got a rope just tied around my waist with my Leatherman on.
Oh, goodness.
But
yes, it is. It is a tool that you use often. I will add that.
Yes. Very handy.
Very handy.
This one has, just to go through, it's got a couple blades on it. It's got the pliers. It's got couple screwdrivers, Phillips and regular, a file, scissors, wire cutter, wood saw, because wood saw is coming very handy when you're on the boat. Well, if you get stranded on a deserted island and you got to cut some wood to make a fire.
You might be there for a while.
Hey, you got plenty of time if you are deserted on an island. Wood saw, can opener, which always comes in handy for opening up sundowners. Wire stripper and a ruler, which if you use on a big fish may take you a while to measure, but you would be able to measure a big fish. And it's got a warranty for 25 years. I know people that have had Leatherman for many years. One thing breaks, they send it in, they just send them a whole new one.
Nice.
So, handy. Great product. We highly recommend that one. And as we always talk about anything that you're looking at on Amazon, if you would please use our link, our affiliate link, cost you the same on Amazon and gives us a little commission from Amazon for referring you, especially the products that we recommend. But anything you buy, because we're referring you to Amazon, check those out. And as we talked about in the last podcast, we've set up a lot of new countries in for our Amazon affiliate program. So if you go to our
website
and go to the support link at the top, support TSR, it'll have all those links in it for a lot of the European countries, Canada, and elsewhere. And we've just got a lot of great products in there. So take a look at the store and buy something for all your sailing friends. And then also social media, you know, keep following us on social media. We keep putting up things on Facebook, even when we go travel to places like Nashville that have nothing to do with sailing. You can still keep up with what kind of crazy adventures we're having. We are not seeing anybody tag their summer sailing.
You guys must be having a very boring summer.
Yeah, there's nobody tagging their summer sailing pictures on Instagram. So if you don't know how to work Instagram, set up an account. And when you post a picture, in the description of the picture, you put hashtag the sailing road, and it will show up in our little area of our listener picks.
And we get to see what you're up to.
Yeah, absolutely. We share all kinds of stuff with you guys. Just send us a pic. That's all we're asking. And then YouTube. I talked about the new AC video that's going up there, but we've got a lot of great videos on our adventures. So if you're new to listen to the podcast, go out there and check out our YouTube channel, The Sailing Road, on YouTube, and we'll keep putting up stuff there.
And if you're enjoying the podcast, as always, we could use your help. And there's lots of ways you can support us. If you go to that support link on the website at thesailingroad.com, it'll give you all the different ways, sharing the podcast and in other ways, the Amazon, all of that, all those links are there. And we'd really appreciate it, anything you can do. And so I think that is it for this week. You have anything else?
Yeah, I think you said it all.
We got it. So we'd love to hear from you. You know, please give us feedback, put reviews on Amazon, let us know what you think, and definitely tell us about your sailing adventures and cruising adventures. We'd love to hear them. You can do all that. Just email us at crew, crew@thesailingroad.com. And that is it for this week. We really appreciate you listening and all your support, and we hope to see you on the water soon.
See you, everybody.